All right, Alexander, we did a video the other day on what's going on in Libya, and we examined what's going on in the East Med pipeline and the moves that Turkey has made to block much of the development of that pipeline from Israel to Cyprus to Greece and onwards to Europe. And we now seem to have the Greek response to Turkey's mini blockade, say, of that pipeline. The fact that Turkey has signed an agreement with Libya, with the government in Tripoli, in order to also explore those waters and to claim those waters as Turkish maritime territory. Greece has responded and it's made a move, and it has done that in the form of signing a maritime deal with Italy, which is interesting given the fact that I believe Italy is actually supporting the Tripoli government that Turkey is also supporting. Yes. So let me read you an excerpt from InfoBricks from Paul Antonopoulos, which dives into this a little bit, and you can comment. Greece and Italy signed a historic agreement yesterday that demarcates the exclusive economic zone, the EEZ, of the two countries in the Ionian Sea. The agreement signed between Greek Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias and his Italian counterpart, Luigi Di Maio, has many ramifications in the entire Eastern Mediterranean region, but especially against Turkey's ambition of East Mediterranean hegemony. The agreement helps establish Italy as an energy player, especially as it has already taken an active position in the construction of the East Med pipeline, a major project between Greece, Cyprus, and Israel, whose joint pipeline will eventually reach Italy through a secondary pipeline project. The EEZ signing comes as Greece, Cyprus, Israel, and Egypt have strengthened their relations at a time when Italy was acting unilaterally to serve their own interests. The change, however, as Rome was becoming increasingly excluded from developments in the region. An example of this is Italy not having as much influence as they wanted over the war in Libya. By acting unilaterally, albeit not as aggressive as Turkey, Rome ran the risk of being completely left on the fringes of East Mediterranean issues. This is because Greece, Cyprus, Israel, and Egypt continued to make deals, improve multilateral relations, and assert strong influence over the events in the region. The EEZ agreement was also a first such deal for Greece. Greece also shares a maritime border with Turkey, Cyprus, Egypt, Libya, and Albania, and now has a legal precedent, which will quickly lead to Athens signing EEZ agreements with other neighboring states, with some speculating Athens could sign one with Egypt as soon as next week. What do you make of this development, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting set of countermoves. And of course, from a Greek point of view, it's understandable because they clearly are feeling that with the advances in of the Turkish-backed government in Libya, which, by the way, is not just a Turkish-backed government, but I mean, most of the fighting, as far as I understand it, is now actually being conducted either by Turkish military or by Turkish military proxies in Libya. So, you know, the Greeks and the Cypriots, but especially the Greeks in this case, were feeling that they were being, to some extent, encircled with the Turks establishing themselves in Libya, as we discussed on our other program, extending their zone of maritime influence into the central Mediterranean. So what the Greeks have done is very astutely, they've turned to a country with which Greece has recently, in recent decades, had good relations, which is Italy, and which is the major, historically the major power in the central Mediterranean, which is Italy. Now, Italy was the former colonial ruler of Libya. Italy established itself as the ruler of Libya, you know, in the period just before the First World War, and they tightened their control in the interwar era when Mussolini launched a very tough policy of, you know, bringing all of Libya under Italian control. And Italian influence has historically always been very strong in Libya. And what has happened is that though they also backed the al-Sarraj government in Tripoli, what happened was that they were pushed to one side by Turkey, which became far more heavily involved. And the Italians feel that they're being pushed out of Libya by the Turks, who are now backing al-Sarraj, and by this coalition of other countries that backed Haftar on the other side. So the Italians are, to some extent, looking to reassert themselves in Libya by now lining up with the Greeks, the Egyptians, the Cypriots, to some extent the Russians, in backing, well, not exactly backing Haftar, but at least involving themselves in these economic projects. And at the same time, by the Italians doing that, they are also helping the Greeks basically counter the moves that Erdogan and Turkey has done. Now, I think it's important to say that Italy is actually quite a significant military power in terms of the central Mediterranean. It's got a large, by the standards, always the standards of Mediterranean states, it's got a fairly large navy. It's even got some small aircraft carriers. It's got, of course, large numbers of bases. It is in a much stronger position to control the central Mediterranean than Turkey is, which is located far away and which is a far smaller navy than Italy does. So it's an interesting move that Italy has taken. And I'm going to make a guess that it's also going to be quite popular in Italy too. And it's one that will be very strongly backed by Salvini, who is the rising, well, the strong figure on the right in Italy, who takes a very strong Christian policy. And he will not want to see, Turkish influence, which he is basically antagonistic to Turkey. He will not want to see Turkish influence extend into a region and into the seas, which have traditionally been referred to by the Italians as Mare Nostrum, our sea. So you can see the Greeks and the Italians coming together to contain the Turks, and you can see again how complicated this whole conflict is.
Yeah, very quickly, Alexander, the deal between Greece and Italy, it establishes the maritime boundaries, but only to a certain point. In other words, it may hinder the Turks to a certain extent. But the real issue, from what I see, if you look at a map, is going to be how Greece resolves its maritime boundaries with Egypt, isn't it? Because while you're looking at extending it to the east, it kind of clears things up, you know, a little bit towards the east. Really, you're looking at north and south, which is what Turkey has done. Turkey has kind of done a north-south demarcation, Turkey to Libya, and now Greece is going to have to do a counter move between Greece and Egypt. In other words, another north-south, and I think that's going to be the real test for Turkey and for all the groups involved, actually, all the groups involved.
Absolutely. And of course, Egypt is a very strong military power. I mean, where Italy has the navy and the air force, Egypt has the army in the area. And it's also got quite a strong air force. And of course, Egypt is a key ally of the US. So for the US, having a situation where Egypt and Turkey are in conflict, it's going to be a tricky one. I mean, I think in the end, they will probably tilt towards Turkey in that sort of conflict. And they won't be happy about Egypt being pro-Haftar, who is seen as being close to Russia. But nonetheless, they will tilt towards Turkey, but they won't want to lose Egypt either. So I think Greece has historically had a good relationship with Turkey. So I can see Greece and Turkey and Egypt actually coming to an agreement quite effectively. So this is perhaps what we were saying in the other program. Erdogan has made some very big gains. He needs to cash them in, and he needs to understand that he's in danger of overplaying his hand. These moves between Greece and Italy and these potential moves between Greece and Egypt are at the moment still very much at their early point. But if Erdogan overplays, he runs a real risk that he could find himself facing a crystallizing anti-Turkish alliance, if you like, or coalition, perhaps, more than alliance, in the central Mediterranean. And it may not be a coincidence that even as all of these diplomatic moves are happening between Greece and Italy and potentially between Greece and Egypt, there is a very powerful Russian delegation apparently now heading towards Turkey, consisting of both Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, and Sergei Shoigu, who is the defense minister. They're both going to Ankara within the next few days. It's just been announced within the next, you know, the last few hours, and they're going to talk about regional issues. So regional issues include Syria, obviously. It will include Libya too. So Erdogan needs to play this game carefully, and he needs to understand that he's gone about as far, I think, as he can go without provoking a stronger reaction. And the Italian-Greek entente, if you like, is an indicator of the way things are going.
Yeah, I think you meant before that Greece has had a traditionally strong relationship with Egypt.
With Egypt, well, so yes. Okay. With Egypt, yes. Yeah. I mean, which is a very long standing one, going all the way back to the 50s, by the way. So I mean, it's a strong relationship with Egypt. So Greece has always been on friendly terms with Egypt, in part because both Egypt and Greece have a wary attitude towards Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the two countries that puzzle me the most are Russia and the U.S., because Haftar was also a CIA guy.
Yeah.
So the U.S. kind of supports Haftar, but they've made statements supporting Turkey now. So they're kind of, you know, sitting on the fence a little bit. And of course, Russia, they're not as heavily invested in Libya as they were in Syria, but they've been supporting Haftar. But now recently, they've been kind of, you know, also playing both sides of the fence, supporting the Turkish position as well. So I think those two countries, to me, maybe those are the game changers in all of this.
Yes.
Maybe those are the countries that will force a peace, but I think they're also the most confusing countries to get a read on as far as Libya is concerned.
I mean, they are in effect the two great powers in the Libyan game. I mean, they are not directly involved so far, but they are the two big powers, the two big military powers, the two military giants in this region. I mean, obviously the United States towers over everybody in this part of the Mediterranean. But Russia is a major power, and of course it's also got good relations with Egypt. It's got good relations with Italy, by the way. Its relations with Greece at the moment are not as good as they once were, and of course it's also got lots of interests with Turkey too. So it's an important player. Now, I think that the Russians will not want to get drawn too deeply into Libya. I think, as I say, it's too far away from them. I don't think they have a direct interest there. But always what the Russians try and do in places where they're not directly invested or interested in is preserve some kind of balance of power. They will not want an all-out conflict in the central Mediterranean, because that never serves their interests either. As for the US, I suspect a lot of the trouble with the US is that it's different parts of the bureaucracy pulling again in different directions. So the CIA probably had some connections with Haftar, historical ones, so they wanted to see Haftar succeed. And then you have other people, the sort of more neocon-minded people, who from their point of view, they don't really want someone like Haftar, who's also got connections with the Russians, coming out on top. So they've been tilting towards al-Sarraj. So this is where I think the US hasn't really focused its mind too clearly. And at the end of the day, as you correctly said on our previous program, they never want to go against Turkey in these sort of quarrels, because the US priority in the end is always to maintain good relations with Turkey.
Yeah, unless Israel tells them.
Unless Israel tells them,
which Israel is on the side in this case of.
Well, I know.
So this is also adds to the confusion. Very, very quickly to wrap up the video. First question, do you think this was a good move by the Mitsotakis government?
Yes.
Italy, and number two, what would you say should be the next strategic move on the Greek side of things in order to counter Turkey's move? One thing that comes to mind for me would be engaging with France, which is an even stronger military power than Italy. And I think would strike a lot of fear in on the Turkish side as well if they saw France actively engaged.
Absolutely. And bear in mind that, of course, France is not just a much immeasurably more powerful country than Italy is, which it is. I mean, militarily, France is a nuclear power. But France also has interests in Libya. And France also has difficult relations with Turkey. So if France becomes involved, it would be a game changer. And France historically has been Greece's greatest ally within the European Union. Not that I think that counts for a huge amount, but you know, for what it's worth, it's always been, if you like, a patron-client relationship between Greece and France. So certainly, I think this move with Italy was a good one by the Mitsotakis government, and it was done fast, and I have to say, successfully. Certainly, they should work with France. Unquestionably, and that would be a big move. They should also, I think, work out their relations with Egypt. And I'm going to say this also, I think they need to start thinking hard about their relationship with Russia. I understand that Jeffrey Pyatt is always there in Athens. He's the US ambassador who's got, you know, all sorts of issues, and he's pulling all kinds of strings in Athens, which he clearly knows how to do and does very, very effectively, and is trying to keep Greece away from Russia. But at the end of the day, Greece has its own interests. And I think a trip by someone important from Athens to Moscow at this time could do no harm.
All right. Well said, Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of the Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell and smash that like button. Also, donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps us out a lot because YouTube is demonetizing us all the time. And they're taking off subscribers and just, you know, downgrading us on all levels. So check us out on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. That really helps out this channel. And of course, go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merchandise. That also helps out this channel. We've got all kinds of great things. Alexander, you've got a magic mug right there.
I do indeed. I have a magic mug. And can I just also say that, you know, Alex is busy refreshing the shop. He's got lots of new products. There's lots of great things there, which you can find on the shop. And they're all amazing. And they are fantastic to look at and fantastic to own. And you should certainly go to the shop and see what they are. But in the meantime, I will refer to the mug I have in my hand, which is my one of my prized magic mugs from the Durant, the best mugs in the world, bar none. Beautifully made, strong, light, beautiful to hold. They keep your tea. And at the moment, I'm drinking, for those who want to know, Iron Goddess of Mercy tea. It's a hot day. So it's the sort of wonderful Chinese oolong tea, which is perfect for this kind of hot weather. So Iron Goddess of Mercy tea in a Durant mug. How much? That is perfection. That is the perfect way to drink that kind of tea, or indeed any sort of tea. And just to confirm, this double-headed eagle that you see there is the double-headed eagle of the Russian Federation, who, as we said, are major players in the diplomatic moves which we have just been discussing. And to say again, the reason we are able to analyze these diplomatic moves so skillfully is because we have the abilities that are provided to us through the refreshment and sustenance we get from drinking from our magic mugs. The best mugs in the world, you will find them in our shop, the Durant Shop. And you will also find there the best polo shirts in the world, like the one I am wearing now, all 100% cotton. This one, as you can see, has the double-headed eagle of the Durant, different from the Russian one. They're amazing to wear. They're exceptionally comfortable. They're 100% cotton. They're phenomenally stylish. You can find them in many colors. You can also find other shirts too, also 100% cotton. You can find short-sleeved and long-sleeved t-shirts. You can find V-neck shirts. You can also find hats, hoodies, and stickers. You can find ebooks on a variety of subjects like Russiagate, Ukrainegate, Brexit, Epstein, oil. You can find all those things in our shop, but please go to our shop also to look at the great new things that are there now. So as Alex rightly said, you support us by coming to the shop and we depend on your support, but you will also find great things in our shop. So support the Duran, buy yourself these amazing things. Alex will tell you how.
You'll find the link for the Duran shop in the description box down below, theduranshop.com. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.